is your ship and you are the captain. Oh, captain, let's make a deal where we both say the things that we both really feel. I feel scared and I'm starting to sink, and I only sink deeper the deeper I think.
Chapter 50, Return Home Sequence. On the third morning, after Shang Chenghua's triumphant and terrified and honestly kind of bewildering return to Changchong Mountain Sect, he finds himself sitting in the peaceful garden of Yue Qingyuan's private residence again. Luo Jiahui is sitting beside him, helping him adjust his arms correctly to better hold the mischievous lump she can finally foist off on other people. Knees holding is somehow more complicated than he thought. How nice to have an expert with him. Luo Qing still looks a little squished to his eyes as she blinks back at him. But she's cute. She's sure to only get cuter, too. Shang Chenghua seriously doubts that Luo Jiahui and Liu Qingge have produced anything less than a dangerously adorable child. He tells this thought to his sister.
She'll always be beautiful to me, because she's mine,
Luo Jiahui says lovingly. Though, she then tilts her head and admits after a pause.
Her father's family are all ridiculously handsome, though.
She's doomed, Shang Chenghua agrees. What misfortune? Luo Jiahui's smile widens. Jiamei still has one of my favorite faces, though, he adds with a wink. Just because Liu Qingge is unfairly good-looking doesn't mean that Shang Chenghua's sister isn't making very important contributions here. I hope that she looks like you. That will make her extra cute. Luo Jiahui flushes slightly pink, which is rewarding and a little nostalgic, because she doesn't do that as often as she used to these days.
Huaga is too kind, she insists, leaning against his shoulder.
The peace and quiet here is nice. It's also nice to have it be just the two of them again, plus a baby. As guilty as that thought makes Shang Chenghua feel, he likes everyone else, he really does. But sometimes he kind of misses it when it was just him and Luo Jiahui and Bing He when he was small. Everything seems so much more complicated these days, so much busier, with their attention divided into so many different directions. Yesterday, Shang Chenghua had to face the other Peak Lords without all the other sects watching. It went better than he thought it would. He didn't die or even get his other leg fucked up, even though Qi Qingqi looked like she wanted to strangle him the entire time, and Wang Qingjia looked like he was smelling shit. They all seemed more pleased than not that he lived. If still a little distrustful of his apparent connections to the demon realm, even though Yue Qingyuan probably told them to act cool about it. Plus, whatever scary thing Shen Qingqiu said to get everyone into line, before Shang Chenghua joined the meeting. The only person who actually dared to voice any objection to Shang Chenghua running off to the demon realm was Mu Qingfang, who continues to look exhausted by Shang Chenghua's mere existence. Yue Qingyuan explained that Shang Chenghua seeing his heavenly demon nephew settled safely in the demon realm was in the best interests of the sect, his calm but firm manner making it clear that the matter is necessary, even if the timing is inconvenient. And the first question that anyone dared to voice was Tang Qingling unhappily asking,
does Shang Shixiang going on vacation like this mean that I'm still the current manager of the Immortal Alliance Conference cleanup efforts?
It's not a vacation, Shang Chenghua wanted to howl, even though he's pretty sure that his Shimei was just being sarcastic.
Logistics is bitter work like that. He's sure that he'll find a mess when he gets back, because his Marshall siblings just don't know how to do everything exactly right. Even with his mostly well-trained personal disciples managing things. But for now, that shit is their problem for once. He thanked Tang Shimei for her hard work in advance, and she glared at him like this was a way worse betrayal to her than the demon thing. Some of them seemed to have formed the impression that he might be some kind of master planner genius to have pulled their asses from the fire of Huanhua Palace sect's bullshit with Tiang Longjun, which is a thought with a very strange taste to everyone. No one seems to like it very much. Not even Shang Qinghua. On one hand, Shang Qinghua is kind of flattered. On the other hand, it's not right at all, and he doesn't want people thinking he can do that sort of work. Truly, Shang Shidi, Wei Qingwei said, with a sort of bemused amazement. Your skills of logic are clearly far beyond the understanding of the rest of us. Because Shang Qinghua's martial siblings are generously non-homicidal, apparently, but also still all assholes. Shang Qinghua actually got to contribute insight to the shit show in that meeting, and for the rest of the day, even meeting with some of his more senior managers and teachers on Anding Peak, mostly just to tell them to keep doing what they're doing, or to stop doing what they're doing right fucking now and go do the right thing again. All his martial siblings looked to him for opinions when discussing whether or not there's going to be a round two of the Immortal Alliance conference, even if they didn't follow his opinions exactly. It sounds like none of the other sects are even thinking about leaving for at least another week, unwilling to peek out from behind Changchong Mountain sect skirts until they're really, really sure that Tiang Longjun is gone. Unwilling to leave the theater until they've seen all the entertainment there is to be had from whatever the fuck is going on with Huanhua Palace sect. And or unwilling to be shown the door until they've seen some kind of justice done for the people who died at the Immortal Alliance conference. At least until Yue Qingyuan kicks them out personally or something. It sounds like a lot of them will still be here when Shang Qinghua gets back. He's not looking forward to it. Still, it's encouraging to hear yet again that none of the sects really seem to want to go to war with the demon realm. Revenge against a specific demon or clan for the loss of a loved one? Oh yeah, some individual people definitely want that. But a lot of the big talkers from before the hellish event seem to have developed indoor voices all of a sudden, probably from their time facing the possibility of an actual war with a returned Tian Longjun at the front of it, leading the full might of the demon realm, actually united for once, which also meant facing the suddenly much higher probability that this was a war they might lose. Anyway, today, Shang Qinghua might have to face some of his nosy martial siblings one-on-one for not letting them into his business before now, and offer some more politics and logistics opinions. But his only real task is to double-check that Anding hasn't set itself on fire, collect a travel bag from his leisure house, and then call Mo Beijun to take him and his nephew back to the demon realm, so he can spend a little time relaxing with his sister and his new niece like this. Yesterday evening, he shared his amazement at just how well his martial siblings are taking everything. No execution, no banishment, not even a little maiming. Liu Qingge and Luo Jiahui just gave him disappointed looks. Now he shares this amazement at his own survival again, because he still can't get over it. Luo Jiahui sighs and sits up to give him another disappointed look, but a gentle one. You should trust the people who care about you more, she scolds. I know that you didn't want to risk Bingha, which is good, and which is why I listened to you and held on to these secrets for a very long time. Bingha is too important, Zhang Qinghua defends. He is, Luo Jiahui agrees immediately, then sighs again and leans back against his shoulder. But sometimes I don't understand how you couldn't see how much we love and trust you, Huaga. It can hurt when that trust isn't returned. Zhang Qinghua winces, thinking of just how long he kept things from her, too. Knowing these kind of things is... it's heavy, Jiamei, he says. I still would have preferred to help you carry them even earlier, she answers. I know you were scared that your senior marshal brothers might not do the right thing, but I think they would have listened. It's really the least they could have done after all you've done for them.
Did you tell them that?
Zhang Qinghua asks, amazed. Luo Jiahui flushes slightly pink and says,
Maybe.
Zhang Qinghua decides that he's going to hold the mental image of this woman determinedly, possibly desperately, scolding Yue Qingyuan and Shen Qingqiu dear to his heart for the rest of his life. It's a beautiful thought, really. He'll have to ask Liu Qingge about that sometime. He'll be surprised if the man didn't feel the urge to ask her to marry him all over again right then and there. Jiamei really is the bravest person I know, he says. She sniffs and says, Huaga clearly needs to think better of himself. Luo Qing seems to decide that she's had enough of being in her uncle's arms and starts to whimper, so Zhang Qinghua passes her back to her mother. He won't blame his niece for having preferences, not with such excellent taste. He's pretty sure that Bing has spent nearly all of yesterday cooped up with his mother and his new little sister. Bingha and the baby seemed utterly enamored by each other. Well, the baby seems fascinated by Bingha's heavenly demon mark, at least, enough to lie there and gurgle contentedly as the young protagonist sits over her with wide eyes and coos. Zhang Qinghua takes this as further proof that Luo Qing is an individual of wise preferences and excellent taste. She'll get more interesting as she gets older, he supposes. Right now, the only thing that his niece can do, unrelated to basic needs, is stare, cry, wiggle her arms a little, and be loved. At least she's very good at her few life skills so far. Luo Qing, he says. Not Liu Qing, after all. It's a good choice. I like it. Madame Liu must have been a little disappointed, though. Did Qinghua have to step in and tell her off for offering too many opinions again?
Only once,
Luo Jiahui answers, probably being generous towards her fearsome mother-in-law again. She decided that Mingyan can carry on the family name.
Ha ha, I'm sure Mingyan will be super happy to hear that.
Liu Qinghua and Liu Mingyan have their mother's name, because there turned out to be lots of matriarchal families in the world of Proud Immortal Demon Way, which Zhang Qinghua has always kind of figured is a result of his being, a little inconsistent with his naming conventions and cultural dynamics, and maybe also having a few too many dominant-type wives who, of course, ended up being dominated by the protagonist instead. Who knows? He doesn't really consider that sort of thing worth thinking about anymore. It is what it is.
When we got married, Luo Jiahui begins, with a slight waver in her voice. He offered to let Bingha take his name, you know. We asked Bingha about it.
Really? Luo Jiahui nods.
Qinghua was willing, and I was happy about it. I was happy that Qinghua was willing to completely accept him like that and couldn't deny my son the opportunity to have a name people recognize and respect. Zhang Tinghua numbly mulls the idea of Liu Bingha around in his head. Nope, he can't wrap his head around it. It's too weird. He still thinks that Zhang Bingha sounds like a weird joke, but Liu Bingha is even weirder. Though that might just be airplane shooting towards the sky talking here.
Do you know what Bingha said?
Luo Jiahui asks him.
What?
He said, but I already have a family name. I like sharing a name with you. It's too easy to imagine that in his nephew's voice, and just imagining his nephew saying that, whether he was shocked or determined or uncertain or stubborn, makes Zhang Tinghua's heart squeeze a little. He's sure that it was a little bit of everything. This young protagonist really is too much sometimes.
That boy, Zhang Tinghua says fondly.
Luo Jiahui smiles.
Qingge was disappointed, but I was relieved. I had no idea that I would be relieved like that. Shouldn't I want my son to have a name with more history? To have that kind of extra belonging to a better family?
Better isn't. It's a name that I made up. I only took it on at first for convenience, telling a lie for Bingha's sake so it would sound like we really belonged together. Huage, I didn't think it was real until I suddenly realized that it was real enough. When Fun Li took it too, and then when Bingha chose to keep it.
Zhang Tinghua's sister has a tear threatening to spill down one cheek, so he fumbles for some kind of handkerchief.
Jamei, babies aren't like plants. Crying on them really doesn't help them grow.
Luo Jiahui laughs wetly.
Qingge said that it was Bingha's choice, and it didn't change him welcoming Bingha into the family, and everything was fine. And then we were going to have a baby together, and I realized that I didn't like the idea of our daughter being the real child of our marriage. I know that Bingha wouldn't have minded much if she'd been Liu Qing, but I liked the idea of both of my children sharing the name that has come to mean so much to me.
It's a nice idea, Zhang Tinghua agrees quickly.
Qingge was fine with it. He listened to me even when I didn't really know what I was saying. He said that he didn't really care much for carrying on family names anyway, that he believes more in a person's individual achievements and the bonds that they make for themselves, not in names.
That does sound like him.
He also said that before we became friends and got to know each other and decided to try, he thought that he would never get married or have children. He thought his life would be completely different. He said that he probably wouldn't have his own family without me, so he liked the idea of our children having my name.
Aw, Liu Shidi.
Zhang Tinghua thinks fondly. Though part of him remembers that without any meddling, the man would have died due to a qi deviation years ago, and that the Baichan war god seemed to cut a kind of lonely figure before he crashed into Zhang Tinghua's deviation from the plot. Luo Jiahui raises her chin and declares, I'm proud of my little family.
It's a good family, Zhang Tinghua promises. Not so little anymore, though.
Luo Jiahui laughs again.
No, she agrees. Warmly, looking down at the daughter she's rocking in her arms, who seems to be drifting off to sleep in the safest, most comfortable spot in the world.
Not so little anymore. It might not have been real in the beginning, but it's real now. We made it real.
Zhang Tinghua thinks that his heart might burst here, but what a way to go.
It's the realest thing that's ever happened to me. He says,
it happened because of you, Huage. I might still be cross with my brother for getting into danger and not asking for the help he needs, because he keeps trying to take care of everything. But I'm very glad he's back, because my not-so-little family really isn't the same without him.
Crying is cool, he reminds himself. It's fine. It's really fine. It happens, bro.
I think that my sister deserves the credit, Shang Chenghua says, as she leans back against him, now that her baby is settled in her arms, and he puts his arm around her. This really all happened because of you, Jiamei.
Little Jiahui sniffles.
We can share the credit, she decides. It happened because of both of us.
Ah, well, I guess that works. Both of us.
And Binghe.
Shang Chenghua laughs. And Binghe, he agrees. Of course, Binghe too. Eventually, Liu Qingge's family show up for a visit, after having given all these reunions a little privacy. And also so Madame Liu can glare at Shang Chenghua for a little while before he leaves. She decides that the Immortal Alliance conference was clearly going to be a mess no matter what anyone did about it, with all these demons running about, and Shang Chenghua decides to take that as a compliment from her. Liu Qingge's parents seem a little uncertain about the young protagonist's demonic heritage, now that they're finally seeing it in person, even though Luo Jiahui said that their son already talked to them about it. Liu Qingge's father apparently quickly determines that Binghe is still Binghe. In this silence is desperate need of a conversational topic, now that it's been determined that everyone present is in good health. The man politely asks after the sort of things that Binghe intends to do for training in the demon realm. Madame Liu apparently gives up any lingering objections to having a heavenly demon for an adoptive grandchild in order to offer opinions on how Binghe should be looking after himself and behaving among demons. She's also too busy looking exasperated as her husband comments on the fascinating beasts throughout the demon realm. Liu Qingge's father is saying that if Binghe has the time, he should really look into taking a trip to see this one really special demonic bird that lives on this one mountain. Shang Chenghua, still a little surprised, in a good way, that feels so fucking weird to see things going so well, even if things are a little stiff, distantly wonders what Cucumber Bro would think about a camping trip with Liu Qingge's family. It's pretty funny to think about. His fellow transmigrator and Liu Qingge's father would probably get along really well. When Shang Chenghua has to excuse himself, because his disciples have arrived to drag him off to Anding Peak so he can survey his little kingdom before he ditches it again, Madame Liu is approvingly watching her adoptive grandson hold her new granddaughter. Liu Qingge's mother then turns on Liu Mingyan and asks her daughter if she's found anyone to marry yet. It's only Madame Liu's helpful opinion that Mingyan would make an excellent mother after all, and someone needs to carry on the family name. Liu Mingyan glares at her older brother for throwing her under the bus like that. Good old Liu Shudi is too busy chatting to his father to notice, though. He looks happy, Shang Chenghua thinks. Luo Jiahui is giving her husband her own fond look, and she catches Shang Chenghua's eye on his way out. They've already said their goodbyes several times over at this point, so there's no need to repeat them. Besides, they'll see each other again soon. No matter how long they've been apart this time, no matter how big their little family gets, it's not going to change anything. Not the important things. But Shang Chenghua misses her already. Shang Chenghua has only been back on Anding Peak for less than a day. He's not actually here to get to work, and he's leaving shortly. But he's already more than ready to flee. Everything is such a mess, especially with so many guests for the emergency discussion conference.
He apparently doesn't have enough personal disciples and competent managers to fling at all this bullshit. Which shouldn't even be coming to him when he's leaving again later today. Haven't Yue Qingyuan and Qin Qingqiu communicated to all these people that he's unreliable yet? Apparently not. Some of these people might just want to gawk at the man who brought a heavenly demon into the sect and lived to tell the tale. Zhang Qinghua really doesn't see why. It's not like he suddenly became super interesting looking or anything. He's honestly considering letting his personal disciples break out the really ridiculous lies to get some of these cultivators to go away. Some of them aren't even from Anting Peak, or even from Changchong Mountain sect. When someone he's actually happy to see shows up, Fu Qiang has taken the time away from her Shizen's side in order to deliver his fellow transmigrator to him. Zhang Qinghua grabs this opportunity with both hands and pretends that these two need to take him away from everything else immediately. After all, who wants to argue with someone in Qingjing Peak uniform right now? Especially the Qingjing Peak cultivator, who could probably say outright that she's Shun fucking Qingqiu's favorite and actually get away with it. Even Zhang Qinghua would probably think twice before naysaying Fu Qiang right now, so he's grateful when she indulgently lets this poor martial uncle get away with pretending she's here to steal him away. Zhang Qinghua thanks her for the rescue. Fu Qiang smiles at him and says, "I look forward to seeing you again soon, Zhang Shishu," before she excuses herself. And Zhang Qinghua can't help but wonder if that means that Shun Qingqiu will send this personal assassin to track him down if he doesn't come back. He's probably overthinking it. "Bro," he says to his fellow transmigrator, as he makes space for himself in Mo Beijun's chair and drops into it. "You kind of saved the world here. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations." Shen Yuan rolls his eyes. They're in Zhang Qinghua's leisure house again, which is still a mess, and Zhang Qinghua's not sure how it's going to get cleaned up again. He could let some disciples in here to do it, he supposes. He's tempted to just leave it a ransacked wreck until his leg feels up to doing something about it, but he apparently doesn't have to hold on to his secrets quite as tightly as he did before. "How's your head?" Zhang Qinghua asks. "Fine," Shen Yuan answers. He is lucky that Zhang Qinghua already saw Mu Qingfang today, and that the Chen Qiao Peak Lord's assessment is backing that claim up. Otherwise, Zhang Qinghua really wouldn't believe that weak response. Mu Qingfang says that Shen Yuan only overextended himself, something to do with having to adjust his spiritual energy in a slightly unnatural way to make use of a demonic artifact like that. "How did you know Su Xian was in Bingha's seals, bro?" "He always felt different," Shen Yuan says. "Didn't you notice?" Yeah, maybe. "I thought it was just because he was the protagonist," Shen Yuan admits. Which is exactly what Zhang Qinghua thought. It seemed like that almost hidden layer of energy clinging to him was probably because he was both human and demon. But then we found the body and it took me a little while, but I eventually realized that the extra energy clinging to him felt a lot like Su Xian. "Bro, I'm not complaining. Your timing was fucking magnificent. It takes guts to shove Shun Qingqiu and Yue Qingyuan aside and tell Tian Langjun himself to wait up a second so you can resurrect his ex-girlfriend." His fellow transmigrator is only, what, 22, 23-ish? There were cultivators in that meeting hall many, many times Shun Yuan's age who looked like they were on the verge of puking their guts out, even when none of the main characters in that scene looked twice at them. That's impressive. Shen Yuan looks embarrassed, but maybe a little pleased. Is he really gonna just give up like that? You didn't put him in Proud Immortal Demon Way.
I don't know. I think so. Maybe. I hope so.
Zhang Qinghua tells his fellow transmigrator a little about their meeting with Su Xian, the new palace master of Huanhua Palace Sect. It's still unclear whether or not she'll last in that position, but Zhang Qinghua is feeling pretty optimistic. The woman has a way of making a person feel like all her attention is on them, even if she was just turning that charm on someone else only a minute ago.
When she told Tian Langdren to take justice on those who really deserved it, she was kind of telling the Demon Emperor to kill the old palace master in front of everyone. And it looks like she's gotten away with it. People seem to have agreed amongst themselves that she was doing her best to be graceful in a bad situation and couldn't possibly have known that Tian Langdren would kill the old man just like that. Su Xian agrees that it all happened so suddenly. It couldn't have happened to a more wicked and selfish man, of course, but it was still very unexpected. Zhang Qinghua is impressed in an uncertain and terrified kind of way. Last he heard, Su Xian and Shen Qingqiu were facing off on how exactly to proceed with the investigation into Huanhua Palace Sect's bullshit. Good luck to Big Bro with having to stand in the middle of that. It sounds super dangerous.
According to the system, Lady Dawn was supposed to be the scum villain from some money can't buy happiness, but most importantly can't buy true power plotline, Shen Yuan reveals. She was supposed to end up getting turned into gold or something in an excruciatingly painful way.
Ah, really? That sounds kind of familiar.
And Dr. Xu, I would have remembered him if you'd remembered enough to tell me about him earlier. Was supposed to achieve partial immortality, this imperfect or corrupt immortality, and show up to be the villain in a plotline that was originally supposed to happen over 100 years from now.
So he is really, really early.
All these scum villains existing before their plot lines get started is apparently really dangerous.
Because of all the changes you made to everything without even noticing, they apparently somehow met early and teamed up to cause even more trouble.
Shen Yuan agrees accusingly.
You really messed up the story.
Yeah.
But I guess things turned out okay.
Bro, is that a compliment that you just said?
No, it was a statement of fact.
Wow, watch out. I might become insufferable.
There's no might about it.
Zhang Qinghua laughs, but the humor has kind of left him as he trails off. They're kind of dancing around one of the most important things here. His fellow transmigrator system actually talks to him without being beaten and badgered into it. So Zhang Qinghua really has to ask his questions now.
Does your system consider the story done now?
Shen Yuan slumps a little and says, no.
Ah, not mine either, of course. But I wondered if yours might be different now that your backstory mission has finally been finished.
Binghe isn't the Demon Emperor yet or anything.
Yeah.
When Zhang Qinghua finally dared to poke his shitty, no-good transmigration system after finishing all those big missions it dropped on him after the world update, it was miraculously moved to reveal...
Plot and character deviations successfully stabilized. Basic accomplishment of Proud Immortal Demon Way original outline remains incomplete.
Zhang Qinghua still isn't totally sure what that means, because his transmigration system never makes anything easy like that.
Bingha is still a teenager, only recently outed as a heavenly demon, stuck between two worlds, being pulled between different powers and paths. He thinks it means that the young protagonist still needs to grow into himself and decide what happens next, before the system will decide that this new version of the plot is complete enough. He can't say that he minds these results too much. He's too grateful that the system honestly let the plot change at all, even if it apparently didn't move the original final goalposts up this far. He gets to keep the new life he made for himself. He gets to keep everything that matters. And it feels so fragile that he almost doesn't dare to look at it. It feels, right now, that he'll face anything that comes next with grace and gladness. Though, in reality, he knows he'll probably face whatever comes next with spitting and complaining. He knows that his fellow transmigrator might have had different hopes for these big missions. Though, sorry that didn't get you what you wanted, bro. It's fine. Shin Yuan sighs and then says firmly, I'll live with it. Ah, really? If I got a backstory like the one that the system gave you, without some amazing prizes to make up for it, I'd probably be throwing a temper tantrum right now. Shang Cheng Hua jokes. If you wanted to throw stuff around my house or something, I don't think I'd notice the difference. You deserve it after the way you saved my life like that. Shen Yuan huffs. I'm not going to throw a temper tantrum. Do you want something nice? I could get you something nice, bro. Spoil you a little for putting up with this bullshit. Anything you want from the demon realm, just name it. Or, hey, what about a luxury vacation to the demon realm? Bingha would probably love it if you visited him. Maybe, Shen Yuan allows, thinking about it. I don't know. I think that I might need to stay here as a witness in the investigation into Huanhua Palace sect. Mu Qingfang has all your information, bro. I still want to see how it goes, Shen Yuan insists. Do you think there's more to your character backstory? Shang Qinghua asks, surprised. It's a totally reasonable thing to think, but for some reason, he hasn't really considered that. It's kind of been busy. No, Shen Yuan says, finally taking a seat on the sofa. Now that the mission is complete, the system told me that there's not. I guess it's one of the few places where you can really get away with not having any background before that, Shang Qinghua murmurs. The system's original plan was to have his fellow transmigrator replace Shun Qingqiu, so he guesses that it didn't really have anything else set up, so it just worked in the Shen Yuan appearing from nowhere part of things in as best as it was able. It's fine, Shen Yuan says again. I don't know what I would have done if the system had given me more backstory or a new family. Ah, yes. In my experience, that's really fucking weird. Shang Qinghua agrees, thinking back to the earliest days of his transmigration, so many years ago now. It doesn't have to be bad, probably, but it was fucking weird. Haha, it was pretty bad. I didn't really enjoy being looked at like they couldn't decide if something else had replaced their actual kid. So, yeah, maybe no more backstory and no replacement family is a good thing. Shen Yuan nods. One of his hands has drifted to his middle. If you want to see it through, bro, it's your choice, Shang Qinghua says. Try not to get into too much trouble here at the sect while we're gone. If one of us gets into too much trouble, it's not me, Shen Yuan replies. Bro, that hurts me. Shen Yuan huffs again, not even grimacing at the joke. Shang Qinghua considers issuing another invitation to follow them to the demon realm, but decides not to push it, because they haven't reached an alarming level of avoidance yet. Zhang Qinghua's fellow transmigrator will be here when he gets back. You really carried us through these missions, Zhang Qinghua tells his fellow transmigrator, because he can't wait to say this. You broke Huanhua Palace sect wide open. We might still be wandering that fucking maze if not for you and the Weeper's Eye. You found Bingha's birth mother for him. Twice. You saved the day. You saved the world. You saved my family, bro. I got to meet my niece, and Bingha got to meet his little sister. And if you try to say, that's not a big deal right now, I'll throw something at you. I'll fucking do it. Then fucking do it, Shen Yuan dares. But he's smiling now. I'm glad it's you, Cucumber Bro, Zhang Qinghua says. What more devastating missile does he have in his arsenal than an uncomfortable level of sincerity for the two of them? I wasn't kidding about getting you something nice for this. What's mine is yours and all that, you know? I know. His fellow transmigrator is free to make his own life now, it seems. And Shen Yuan mostly looks like he's lost in the face of a plot that's been forced wide open. The big question is, what now? Zhang Qinghua gets that feeling. He's happy about it overall, but he gets the terror too. He gets the loss too, in a dulled and distant sort of way. It takes a while to get over it. Sometimes, even now, Zhang Qinghua finds himself still getting over it. I'll think about what I want, Shen Yuan promises. I'll let you know when you get back. Come up with something good, Zhang Qinghua tells him, grinning back. No wrong answers, though, and take your time if you need it. You know, it's a surprisingly big world out there to choose from, and there's a lot of room for change. Shen Yuan returns the Weeper's Eye to him. The other transmigrator looks tempted to hold on to the artifact. It's super useful, Zhang Qinghua can admit, even if it's incredibly creepy. But Shen Yuan is smart enough to admit that using it all the time isn't good for him. Zhang Qinghua's fellow transmigrator is also smart enough to get rid of it, to keep himself from giving in to temptation. Peerless Cucumber knows his tropes. Zhang Qinghua is really proud of his fellow transmigrator. Zhang Qinghua considers putting it back in the creepy basement, but his leisure house isn't as secure as it was before. Oh, there's a new lock on the door, and his personal disciples assure him that they'll be keeping an eye on it in his absence. But Zhang Qinghua doesn't have the time to set up all the personal protections that Shen Qingchu and Yue Qingyuan stripped from his house. The place where Zhang Qinghua would put his spiritual seal to open the secret basement has been, kind of ruined. So the hole in the floor to the secret basement is stuck open. So yeah, Zhang Qinghua is probably going to keep this pouch on his person until he finds somewhere better to put it. This isn't the best option, but luckily, the Weeper's Eye can't whisper at him from inside this one. He might ask Wei Qingwei about making use of one of Wang Qingjia's storerooms, but he might just ask Mo Beijun about finding somewhere good in the Ice Palace. Still, after Shen Yuan has excused himself, Zhang Qinghua finds himself staring at the opening to the secret basement. He really doesn't like not being able to close it up again. Unable to stand his own curiosity any longer, Zhang Qinghua grabs his sword and uses it to float down just to have a look. His secret basement is kind of a mess, too, but a more careful one than the one above Zhang Qinghua's head. This place is just too creepy to fuck with carelessly, no matter how angry a person is. Or so Zhang Qinghua thinks, until he catches sight of a handwritten sign on the floor, next to the shine of a broken edge, peeking out from underneath a cloth covering. Zhang Qinghua carefully takes hold of the cloth's edge, and then rips it from its place. fuck, he says, as the cloth settles on the floor. What was once a full-length polished silver mirror with an ornate golden frame has been violently destroyed. Shang Qinghua can only see fragments of his reflected figure now in all its broken pieces. He wondered if this thing caught anyone's attention, especially after his conversations with his scariest Shuxiang. Now he only has more questions. Shang Qinghua haphazardly replaces the cloth, leaves the creepy basement, and returns to his packing. When he gets back, he thinks he's going to have his leisure house renovated. Everything in that shitty hole is either getting destroyed or stored on some other peak. Chongding Peak, or Wanjian Peak, or maybe even Kuxing Peak, before he loses all peace of mind. It's played its part in the story. Now it's time to move on and get rid of crap that never belonged to him anyway. Upon returning to Chongding Peak to collect Binghe, Shang Qinghua finds that Ming Fan and Ning Yingying have managed to convince someone to let them see his nephew, possibly by being the ones to deliver some of Binghe's belongings from Qingjing Peak. Ning Yingying is alternatively clinging to Binghe while crying and poking at his heavenly demon mark to see if it'll come off or something. Shang Qinghua knows better than to get in the middle of that. He gives the kids their moment, and instead focuses on leaving Peng Hongpeng and Lin Wenjiao with some last-minute instructions for the Immortal Alliance Conference cleanup. It sounds like Xi Zhao Peak Lord Tang Qingling, Longsheng Peak Lord Xue Qingming, and Qian Chao Peak Lord Mu Qingfang will be headed back out to Jue Di Gorge in the next couple days. Some Anting Peak cultivators will be going with them to relieve and reinforce the ones who are still there. It sounds like Boshan Tower and Wanting Wall are going to want some of our people to reinforce the realm borders, so we probably won't be able to rely on Baichan Peak escorts for certain deliveries for a while, Shang Qinghua tells them. If anyone tries to get too hissy about non-emergency deliveries being postponed or canceled, regretfully inform them of the events of the Immortal Alliance Conference, like you just can't believe they didn't hear about it or something. The, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you lived under a rock approach, Lin Wenjiao nods. Got it, Shifu. How do I make people understand that we can't deliver things that Zui Xian Peak and Wan Tian Peak aren't making right now? Uh-huh, you can't. Good luck, though. It's the fearful sound from the direction of the Qingjing Peak disciples. Ming Fan is the one who squeaked, Shang Qinghua thinks. That alerts them to the arrival of Yue Qingyuan and Xin Qingqiu. Shang Qinghua is kind of touched that they apparently came to see him off personally like this. He also can't help but stare at his scariest Shuxiang and wonder how exactly he can best phrase, "Hey, bro, what the fuck?" Right now, it kind of seems like Xin Qingqiu owes him a new creepy mirror. Except for the part where Shang Qinghua absolutely doesn't want a new creepy mirror and is kind of super fucking glad that one is wrecked beyond repair. With his best smile, he goes through the motions of a farewell with his senior martial brothers who miraculously decided to keep him around. He even gets an extremely unusual clap on the shoulder from Yue Qingyuan, who's probably trying to emulate Liu Qingo with that, and Shang Qinghua appreciates the effort. Even though Big Bro makes him repeat twice that he really is coming back. It's almost like you don't trust me or something, he jokes. I'm simply ensuring that Shang Shidi knows that we both expect and welcome his return as a valued member of this sect. Yue Qingyuan answers, still smiling widely. I wouldn't want there to be any misunderstandings of Shang Shudi's place here. Shang Qinghua laughs, only a little nervously. Ah, Ashuri asks for clarity on whether or not he's going to be executed or banished for his actions just one time, and some Shuxiangs apparently take it a little personally. Are you that afraid of my sister and Liu Shuri, Shuxiang? Shang Qinghua asks. He sees Shen Qingju smirk briefly. He saw that. Perhaps, Yue Qingyuan agrees wryly. When he's assured that An Dingpeak will continue to be looked after in his absence, Shang Qinghua says, about my basement.
What about it?
Shen Qingju asks flatly. Shang Qinghua looks at Shen Qingju, and Shen Qingju looks evenly back at him. For all Shang Qinghua knows, Shen Qingju violently destroyed that special item because he was angry and it was there, and his anger had to go somewhere. Shang Qinghua, kind of doubts that he's that lucky, though. In the end, Shang Qinghua is too much of a coward to ask his scariest Shuxiang what the fuck happened to the creepy mirror in his secret basement. Some things, Shen Qingju's glare tells him, he doesn't get to know. People should definitely stay away from it until I clean it up, Shang Qinghua finishes weakly. I'll be getting rid of it, I think. I don't think I'm going to be getting any more use out of it.
No,
Shen Qingju agrees. If Shen Qingju saw anything, whatever he saw, he apparently decided not to act on it. Airplane shooting towards the sky doesn't really know what to make of that. The world in the mirror is such a different place, filled with different people, and their world doesn't have to be anything like it if they keep choosing otherwise. It doesn't have to matter at all if they just decide it doesn't, Shang Qinghua hopes, maybe a little desperately, but more confidently than he might have before.
This sounds like a wise decision,
Yue Qingyuan agrees, like he's just glad to see them getting along. Ha, I hope so.
Hurry back, Shang Shuri,
Shen Qingju says, just before they part, and it sounds kind of like a warning, though that might just be because he's the one saying it, and Shang Qinghua is the one hearing it.
We'll have work for you when you return.
Ah, now that makes me not want to come back. What a relief it is to call Mo Beijun and have him answer right away. Shang Qinghua and Luo Bingha reluctantly leave Changchong Mountain Sect behind them for now, whisked away to what feels like the other side of the world, to the far reaches of the demon realm in only a few shadowy and uncomfortable steps. Mo Beijun looks good, stressed around the edges, but good. The winds of the snowy desert where they appear feel like they cut at the skin like knives. For a moment, it feels like Mo Beijun has taken them to the middle of nowhere. But then an icy structure rises from the ground ahead of them. It's not very fancy looking, nor is it intimidatingly large. But the icy doors rumble open and reveal a long flight of stairs reaching deep into the ground. The tunnel down is enormous. Shang Qinghua honestly never realized just how pervasive fucking stairs were until recently. He's kind of just resigned to it when Mo Beijun picks him up yet again to carry him down into this icy fortress. The place where the Northern Demon Kings ascend to their title isn't like Huanhua Palace, stone and metal, or even like the White Sea Palace, built into the cliffside of the Stormy Inlet. It's apparently ice all the way down. The ice of the walls and ceiling gets clearer as they go down, turning from glittering white to a nearly glowing blue, looking more like flawless crystal. The wide and rippling walls are relatively smooth. The stairs are perfectly carved, but Xiang Qinghua looks up at the high ceilings and he's pretty sure those are claw marks, apparently made by something that must have been as large as their echoing tunnel.
"What is this place?" Bingha asks.
"This is where the first Northern Demon King's power was devoured by the second, after their long battle in the desert above,"
Mo Beijun answers. "Yeah, it kind of looks to Xiang Qinghua like they're going down into the lair where something monstrous might drag its prey. At the bottom of the stairs is an even more enormous cavern, a great hall with tall columns of ice, adapted by the descendants of those first Northern Demon Kings to have smooth floors, carved doors and walls, and additional hallways going off in different directions, illuminated by white crystals set into elaborate icy posts. Now this cavernous lair is looking more like a palace. There are some guards and servants in Mobei clan colors standing by. It's fucking freezing down here." Xiang Qinghua doesn't have time to voice that, though, only to shiver, before a touch from Mo Beijun fixes it. The chill drains away through their point of connection. Xiang Qinghua can still tell that it's incredibly cold down here. The feeling of Mo Beijun's energy running through him is weird and not exactly comfortable just yet, but at least it's not, "This is gonna kill me," unbearable. Mo Beijun then offers his hand to Bingha, who carefully takes it for a moment, and Xiang Qinghua can see his nephew relax slightly with relief.
"Remember how to adjust your energy,"
Mo Beijun tells him, and Bingha nods.
"Uncle, we're really doing 7 days down here?"
"Yes," Xiang Qinghua tells him. Bingha makes a face, but only a brief one, and this teenage displeasure makes Mo Beijun's lips twitch in amusement. Xiang Qinghua can almost see his nephew telling himself that at least it's not as bad as the Eternal Abyss. This is almost hilariously different to how things went in Proud Immortal Demon Way. From one of the hallways steps another Mo Bei clan guard, a demon taller and wider than even Mo Beijun, with spotty grayish skin and a nose like an elephant seal. Xiang Qinghua perks up a little to recognize Hong Hao, the water demon who was in charge of running the White Sea Palace, and a second look around the room reveals some familiarity in the guards and servants, such that this transmigrator would bet a lot that these people are also from the White Sea Palace. "This definitely didn't happen in Proud Immortal Demon Way," Xiang Qinghua thinks. "It had just been Luo Bingha here when Mo Beijun had finally ascended, much later in the story, as the demon's most impressive ally and only person resembling a trusted confidant. Even though the protagonist had shamelessly used the ascension to augment his own power as well, Xiang Qinghua doesn't remember anything about Mo Beijun bringing in his own people like this. Hong Hao reveals that the preparations are almost complete, and the ascension will be set to begin later tonight. The water demon then shows them away from the doors to the oldest chambers of this underground fortress where Mo Beijun's shitty father's body apparently waits right now, and instead shows them down one of the hallways to a much more familiar-looking, normal-sized, for demons from the Northern Kingdoms at least, set of rooms, including a sleeping chamber. Mo Beijun explains the ascension ritual as he understands it. He intends to have none of the guards or servants within the oldest caverns. Only a handful he is certain are completely loyal will remain, on watch in the entrance hall. Only Xiang Qinghua and Luo Bingha may come with him into the oldest caverns. For any other demon clan, this underground fortress might be used as a tomb for their ancestors as well as a place of ascension. But there aren't any bones of the previous Northern Demon Kings left. there won't be any remains to lay to rest. It doesn't take long before they're interrupted, and, of all people, Mo Beijun's young cousin, also from the White Sea Palace, pokes his head into the room. Mo Bei Zhao heard that Luo Bingha is back and wants to drag him off for a tour, without leaving this underground fortress, he specifies hastily, before the ascension ritual. Mo Bei Jun allows it. Shang Cheng Hua shrugs at his nephew. It occurs to him, as Bingha warily follows Mo Bei Jun's cousin away, off into trouble probably, that Mo Bei Jun kind of had to find trusted people for Bingha's sake. When he told Shang Cheng Hua that he would protect his family, making a place for Shang Cheng Hua's nephew meant looking beyond his own strength into the logistics of bringing vulnerable humans into his life. Mo Bei Jun has reliable people now. Shang Cheng Hua is still nervous, though. Still very nervous. He tells Mo Bei Jun about the state of things at Changchong Mountain Sect. In turn, Mo Bei Jun updates him on the state of things with various demon lords and demon kings now that word is spreading that Tian Langjun has called off any sort of war with the human realm. There's a little bit of disappointment, apparently. A little bit of weeping and wailing that the extreme violence is canceled. A little bit of resigned grumbling that Tian Langjun is back to his human-loving bullshit again. There's been no movement from Shifeng Jun or Yangmeng Jun's corners so far, as the Western and Eastern Demon Kings apparently want to lick their wounds in peace right now. Qian Jun, on the other hand, is pissed off. The Southern Demon King was probably the most eager of the Demon Lords for a war with the human realm. As one of the older demon lords, and now the oldest of the demon kings, she's apparently one of the ones who originally helped Mo Bei Jun's shitty father wreck an immortal alliance conference so hard that the cultivation sects canceled these big events for years out of very reasonable fear. What about your uncle? Shang Cheng Hua asks.
He returned to the Ice Palace, but we did not speak.
Yeah, Shang Cheng Hua didn't think they did. He'd be surprised if they did. Do you think he'll try something, my king?
It is certain,
Mo Bei Jun says darkly. No ideas what, though?
No.
Shang Cheng Hua has his hand on Mo Bei Jun's collarbone right now. The man's fur cloak discarded across the bed of this borrowed room. When he shifts his hand to rest over his king's heart, the beat there is steady. But the way Mo Bei Jun's hands run over Shang Cheng Hua's thigh is unsettled. Mo Bei Jun is on the edge of getting everything he's ever wanted. By the rules of the original Proud Immortal Demon Way, since he's not the golden protagonist, something is pretty much guaranteed to go wrong. The next interruption comes from Hong Hao, here to unhappily tell them that Mo Bei Jun's cousin and one of the wind demons were apparently using shields from the armory to sled down some of the hallways and tunnels of this underground fortress earlier. And now Mo Bei Zhao might be trying to rope Bingha into it. Hong Hao thinks this is probably disrespectful to Mo Bei Jun's monstrous ancestors and also just a bad idea in general. Shang Cheng Hua sighs and drops his head back against the bed. Someone told him that we didn't bring any cute Chen Chao Peak disciples with us this time, right? Mo Bei Jun just snorts.
He is excited to be away from the White Sea.
Still, they get up to go put a stop to that. In defense of these young people and their bullshit, that does sound kind of fun. Shang Cheng Hua has definitely heard of four disciples at Changchong Mountain Sect pulling worse stunts. Wan Tian Peak disciples have this thing for sword throwing and knife throwing, which Mu Qingfang fucking hates, especially since Wei Qing Wei is really good at it and considers it a party trick that never gets old. Also, trying to shut down the occasional daring sword flying races through ridiculous obstacle courses was an abysmal failure, until Shang Chenghua was just like, why not just make it an official sect event? And promptly got handed the responsibility of organizing that bullshit. So at least that shit is supervised most of the time now. When they get back to the cavernous entrance hall, it looks to Shang Chenghua like there was going to be an attempt to graduate to sledding down that massive fucking staircase. Bingha is adamant that this wasn't his idea and he would never do something like that in such a sacred place. Shang Chenghua kind of believes him. A glance at Mobei Jun reveals that the demon lord is having just as much trouble being honestly angry about this as Shang Chenghua. It's just too funny. At least, everything is all fun and games until a snowy wind comes howling down the massive staircase, the wind whipping around the entrance hall, and the snow on the wind whipping into the shape of a person. The tall, sharp figure of Shuang Yun skids along the hallway, falling backwards and catching himself with a hand, then pushing himself back up again so he can bow in front of Mobei Jun. Mobei Jun has explained this to Shang Chenghua. Wind demons are all fast, but when they're casting their spells to travel at their incorporeal fastest, their own reflexes can't keep up with their incredible speed. Of course not. This would make them impossible for even the protagonist to stop. Most wind demons travel along set paths and memorize when to begin slowing down. Shuang Yun is young and impressively fast, even among wind demons, reveling in his own excellence, and apparently finds it more efficient most of the time, and apparently not at all embarrassing, to just crash into his target and reform afterwards. Oh, like disciples finding out about momentum the hard way when they're learning how to fly, Shang Chenghua said after this explanation. There's a reason every single peak has to break out the cushioning for those lessons. Ling Guangjun is here, Shuang Yun reports breathlessly. It's not a surprise, but Shang Chenghua still stiffens. He's a bit offended, too, because he's pretty sure he knows exactly what sneaky trick this wicked uncle intends to try, and Ling Guangjun is just walking in the front door like this? Mobei Jun summons the space-tearing spear to his hand at once. No one turned him away? Mobei Jun's cousin asks. He says that he's here to witness the ascension. Shuang Yun answers, a little helplessly, implying that someone has already asked Ling Guangjun to leave and been told that they were being too rude trying to deny Mobei Jun's closest family member or something. You're gonna make him leave, right? Mobei Zhao asks next, looking towards his older cousin. Shuang Yun and Luo Bingha also have hopeful, expectant looks. Mobei Jun says nothing and looks towards Shang Chenghua, who looks anxiously back. They knew that something like this was probably going to happen. Ling Guangjun was probably going to make Mobei Jun fight him to make him leave, relying on Mobei Jun's unwillingness to throw the first punch to make his nephew back down. Shang Chenghua really hates his in-laws so fucking much. Why, oh, why did an airplane shooting towards the sky add in a line about how the Mobei clan's ascension ritual doesn't allow an audience? He's really trying to make you kill him, huh, my king? Shang Chenghua asks weakly.
So it seems,
Mobei Jun agrees. You can't just send him away? Bingha asks. Mobei Jun looks at Shang Chenghua's nephew with a frown. They have already established here that Ling Guangjun won't be turned away so easily. Shang Chenghua is distracted by the man of the moment finally coming into view. The way that Ling Guangjun comes down the stairs, this casual approach, disguising future trickery, really makes a person, Shang Chenghua is that person, want to grind their teeth. Why does Ling Guangjun really have to force this? Just, can't you send him far away if you don't want to kill him? Bingham mutters. Out of the corner of his eye, Shang Qinghua sees his nephew reach out and flick the space-tearing spear in Mo Beijun's hand. Like before? Mo Beijun's eyes widen slightly. Lin Guangjun is reaching the bottom of the stairs, a wide smile across his face, probably at his nephew's obvious discomfort at his presence. Lin Guangjun's eyes flick over Shang Qinghua and his nephew in consideration. That makes a fresh rush of dread go down Shang Qinghua's spine. And then Lin Guangjun's eyes go wide, and the demon lord throws up his arms and a shield of demonic energy. Because Mo Beijun has drawn back his arm and thrown the space-tearing spear at his shitty uncle. The spear is already crackling violently with shadowy demonic energy as it whistles through the air. The weapon connects with Lin Guangjun's hastily raised shield and explodes in a lightning-bright flash. When the light clears, Lin Guangjun is gone. The stairs that the demon lord was standing on are gone too. An impressive spherical emptiness has been carved out of the bottom of the icy staircase, taking out a large chunk of the floors and walls, too, leaving only wisps of shadowy energy fading away, and the broken remains of the space-tearing spear, finally cracked beyond its limits. Just like that, like the Huanhua Palace sect lantern keeper, or the gardeners who were in their way, the threat of Mo Beijun's shitty uncle has apparently been transported fuck knows where. Shang Qinghua hopes that his king dumped his shitty uncle and those chunks of this underground fortress somewhere really unpleasant. Somewhere it will take the other demon lord weeks to drag his sorry ass back to the northern demon kingdoms. Lin Guangjun didn't even get to speak any of his poison to the nephew he's treated so badly. Oh, Shang Qinghua has the cleverest fucking nephew. Clearly, Lin Guangjun didn't expect that the nephew he hates so much has managed to pick up a nephew-in-law who doesn't see why this powerful demon lord and respected family member can't be treated like an inconvenient background character. Truly, the young have ways of seeing right through the older generation's ways of doing things. Why follow the original story at all anymore? Why do what you're supposed to do when there's a better way? Shang Qinghua bursts out laughing. Mo Beijun smiles at him. Holy shit, my king! Where did you send him? Well, that was very efficient. Another voice interrupts. Shang Qinghua turns to see another figure coming down the stairs. Carefully hopping past the stairs, Mo Beijun ripped through the shadowy void with his uncle. To those who didn't know better, the newcomer appears to be a teenage boy. But Shang Qinghua knows better. Tian Langjun is wearing a black fur cloak that looks way too big for him, with his black hair loose around his shoulders. He smiles at them as he steps out of the dip in the floor made by the space-tearing spear explosion. Shang Qinghua distantly thinks there's something kind of lumpy about him. Honestly, it's not just kind of lumpy. There's an enormous unnatural bulge about the Demon Emperor's torso and shoulders, brought to everyone's attention when Tian Langjun smacks his bulky chest a couple of times and opens the cloak. Sushi, come out, he says scoldingly. There are people. Be sociable. A snout pokes its way out of Tian Langjun's cloak, flicking a forked tongue several times, before the rest of the head of an enormous snake follows. Shang Qinghua can see the unnatural bulge of the cloak slowly disappearing as the snake unwinds itself from around Tian Langjun's torso and drops to the icy floor. Once the tail has plopped down with the rest of the scaly coils, the enormous snake transforms into a recognizable tall and pale demon in black. Zushi Long does a full-body shudder, but bows politely. Then he folds his arms and frowns at his uncle, who undoes the fur cloak and throws it carelessly over the snake demon's head. Beside him, Shang Qinghua can feel Mo Beijun's fury stirring, especially at the revelation of Zhu Jilang, who ambushed him at the Immortal Alliance conference. But no one moves, of course, because this is the Demon Emperor. Tianlangjun can start wars or finish them as he likes, even calling them off on a whim.
You, Binghe says, totally unwelcoming.
I was invited, Tianlangjun says mildly, putting his hands on his hips. I was curious and had nothing better to do, since my original plans were cancelled, so I accepted the invitation. Don't worry, I made Lingguangjun no promises.
Beside him, Zhu Jilang is fumbling to get the cloak over his shoulders.
I mostly wanted to meet the young prince who is jumping all around the place so suspiciously. Clearly, I should have been paying you more attention, young Mobei.
Mobei Jun glowers back at the Demon Emperor. Unintimidated, Tianlangjun turns his attention to Shang Qinghua next, and Mobei Jun shifts slightly in case he needs to whip Shang Qinghua behind his back or something.
Clearly, I should have been paying more attention to you, Lord Shang, Tianlangjun says. Sorry about the Immortal Alliance conference. I would have done things differently if I'd known it was you when we finally met.
Thanks, Shang Qinghua says. Why, though?
Tianlangjun waves a hand over his too young body.
This is all thanks to you, he says brightly. Like, that's not one of the most horrifying things Shang Qinghua has ever heard.
Actually, that's not really one of the most horrifying things that Shang Qinghua has ever heard, especially since the list got overhauled very recently. It's not in the top 10 of the most horrifying things Shang Qinghua has ever heard, honestly. Still, it's not a nice thing to hear, especially not now. Shang Qinghua was pretty sure that Tianlangjun's unnatural youth was somehow his fault. But it's not so nice to hear that Tianlangjun's OP restoration was also directly his fault.
My nephew stumbled, well, slithered, onto your search for a way to return one's youth and power with those Huanhua disciples. It was quite a good stroke of fortune for us. My nephew didn't overhear the side effects, unfortunately, so I ended up looking a little younger than intended before negating those. But time fixes all ills,
You look good for your age, Shang Qinghua agrees faintly.
My nephew visited that pocket abyss again, but that wasn't helpful.
Tianlangjun continues conversationally. What a rude little man that founding master was.
You met him?
Yes, Zhu Jilang answers. I killed him.
Shang Qinghua doesn't really know what to say to that. Wow, palace masters are dropping like flies, huh? He can't say he's too torn up about the garden master's death, but he's still taken aback. The snake demon, who is a heavenly demon as well, just blinks back at him. Zhu Xilong's eyes are large and slitted like an animal. His stare has an unnervingly fathomless quality.
So many of these cultivators forget that immortal is just a word that they decided to take for themselves,
Tianlangjun says, amused.
Regardless, it appears that I owe you, Shang Qinghua.
The Demon Emperor's eyes flick towards his son.
In more ways than one, he finishes more solemnly.
I wasn't lying to you, Binghe says flatly.
Apparently not, Tianlangjun agrees.
They stare at each other. Even Zhu Jilang looks uncertainly between them.
Are you going to apologize? Binghe demands.
Apologize? Tianlangjun repeats. The Demon Emperor kind of says it like the idea has never occurred to him. Not seriously, anyway. Why should he apologize when he thinks that he's done nothing wrong? Even if he has done something wrong, he's the Demon Emperor. Apologizing is something people do to him.
Bingha lifts his chin and stands his ground. Zhang Qinghua is so proud of his nephew and also terrified for him. You really are Su Xian's son, Tian Longjun muses. Bingha just keeps staring at him. Then the demon emperor sighs and says, I'm sorry. Holy shit, Zhang Qinghua thinks. The young protagonist really can achieve the impossible. Thank you, Bingha says. I would have done things differently if I'd known the truth, Tian Longjun insists. You stopped the Northern Demon King from killing me, Bingha allows, a little begrudgingly. Even if you didn't know it was me, and if you hadn't decided to force things into the light, then maybe no one would have ever found out what the old Huanhua Palace Master had done, and my birth mother never would have been found and brought back to life. You shouldn't have threatened everyone to make them tell the truth, but what happened to you was wrong. Tian Longjun listens to his son with what Zhang Qinghua thinks is amused tolerance. Thank you, the demon emperor says, a little wryly. Bingha nods, then adds, I was raised by my uncle and a woman named Luo Jiahui. She's my mother. This undeserved generosity from your son is all because of her, Zhang Qinghua thinks in agreement. Be grateful, asshole. I don't really know Su Xian, Bingha adds. She's a difficult woman to get to know, Tian Longjun says. She's waiting for you to come talk to her, Bingha tells him expectantly. Tian Longjun raises his eyebrows in interest. Is she? Beside the demon emperor, Su Xilong closes his eyes and sighs. Tian Longjun looks up at his nephew, who honestly looks like he could pass as his uncle's father, with an amused expression. Zhang Qinghua has a powerful vision of Su Xilong having to deal with a demon emperor who looked even younger than this. He bets that was interesting. Maybe I'll wander down to Huanhua Palace sect and pay a visit at some point, Tian Longjun decides before he looks back to Bingha. Maybe one of these days I'll wander down to Changchong Mountain sect and pay a visit there too. Holy shit, Shun Qingqiu will fucking love that, Zhang Qinghua thinks, knowing that the man will not love it, not even a little bit. All of Zhang Qinghua's martial siblings will feel feelings not at all like love if that happens, and they're all going to blame him for it. I'm not going to be there for a while, Bingha says. Oh? I'm going to be here in the demon realm. Well, maybe I'll be paying some visits to the Ice Palace again, Tian Longjun decides next, looking towards Mo Bei Jun now. It's been too long since I visited. We'll be happy to have you, Zhang Qinghua says hastily. Tian Longjun's pleasant smile widens to hear that. Lord Zhang, can you really speak on behalf of the Northern Demon King? He asks.
Yes,
Mo Bei Jun says flatly. Fascinating, Tian Longjun says delightedly. I've really missed out on so much. How interesting the world has become with these new generations of humans and demons. We'll all have to get together sometime to share our fascinating stories, rather than let other people continue to tell them for us. After all, if you don't tell your own story, then apparently someone else will take over and make something up. Apparently, Zhang Qinghua echoes. However, I think that I won't intrude on your hospitality just yet. Really? Tian Longjun nods graciously. As my personal gift to you, young Mo Bei, in celebration of your ascension, I'll keep your uncle away if he manages to return from wherever it is that you sent him. Thank you, Zhang Qinghua says. For now, I've had my fill of these dramatic confrontations. Tian Langchun decides, which makes Zhang Qinghua so fucking incredulous that he can't understand the words at first. Oh, the demon emperor is done with dramatic confrontations, is he? He's had his fill of this kind of bullshit, has he? Still, if the man is leaving, then Zhang Qinghua won't stop him. As Tian Langchun makes his apparently irreverent goodbyes, Zhang Qinghua sees him give Bingha a look so reminiscent of Su Xian that it's startling. Neither of these legendary figures really know what to do with their son, huh? They can take control of a room, but one-on-one, it's kind of awkward. They've failed Bingha so many times already, even if it wasn't, arguably in some cases, their faults. How do they make sure that it goes right this time? Of all people, Zhang Qinghua finds himself weirdly reminded of Luo Fanli and her "I'm untouchable if I only act like it" act. Zhu Xilong drops to the floor in a pile of enormous snake and wraps himself around Tian Langjun's chest again, like some massive living scarf, as the demon emperor swings the fur cloak over his shoulders and his scaly nephew. After wishing them all luck with a jaunty wave, Tian Langchun carefully hops over the hole in the floor for a second time and begins to climb the icy staircase back out to the snowy desert above. The demon emperor cuts a lonely figure as he leaves them. Once he's out of sight, Zhang Qinghua sags against Mo Beijun's side. "Holy shit," he says.
"Yes,"
Mo Beijun agrees. There's only a little time left before the ascension, so Mo Beijun starts giving the final orders. The Mo Bei clan members who were preparing his father's body, including an ancient demoness with the dangerous elegance of an iceberg, some many greats aunt who manages another ancestral site, filter out of the central chambers. Zhang Qinghua takes the opportunity to take his nephew outside, who looks, stricken is the best way to put it, maybe. Bingha falls into his open arms gratefully. Zhang Qinghua pats the young protagonist on the back, marveling yet again at how warm Bingha apparently runs now that the demonic energy beating against Su Xian's seals has been freed. Nephew hugs are already good, but the demon side honestly makes them even better. Sorry that your birth parents aren't, what you expected.
It's okay, Bingha mutters. Mama said that relationships can be awkward when they're new, and that they can get better. She said that it took time and effort before you and she stopped feeling strange with each other.
Ah, of course. Your mother is always right about everything.
Bingha huffs. I don't know if I want to get to know that man, he admits.
That's understandable.
He did some awful things. Even if I don't know if he actually killed anyone at the Immortal Alliance conference, he was going to do it.
We aren't the things we thought about doing, Zhang Qinghua reminds him. Though, he definitely killed some people before that.
My birth mother says that I should give him a chance, though.
Demons are, complicated, Zhang Qinghua reminds him. They're different. The way that they do things is different. I don't understand what my king is thinking more than half the time. So maybe some time spent with other demons and away from all these dramatic confrontations will help things settle into place.
Maybe, Bingha says doubtfully.
Your birth father is a little weird for a demon, though.
Bingha laughs and squeezes Zhang Qinghua gently. That's okay, the young protagonist says, with growing confidence. I don't really need him.
Ah, well. After all, uncle, Bingha says, drawing back and smiling.
You're a little weird for a human, but I have you. Xiang Qinghua's heart does a flip in his chest, so it feels that that joking insult is a sincere compliment. He tells himself that it's probably the terror of apparently being in a parenting competition with a demon emperor. Nevertheless, he smiles back at his nephew. Yes, he agrees, and ruffles the young protagonist's hair. For my crimes. Bingha laughs. Come on, let's get this ascension over with, Zhang Qinghua says tiredly. It's been stressful enough already. Too many surprises. I can't believe we still have 7 days of all of that stuff ahead of us. Bingha nods, grimacing slightly. Uncle, when you get married, you're not going to have to do anything too weird, right? Who said anything about marriage? Zhang Qinghua asks, waving a hand dismissively. It's a little soon to be talking about things like that, don't you think? I don't really know if things are that serious yet. Bingha stops abruptly. Out of all the incredible things that the young protagonist has been through in the past month or so, all the great and terrible bullshit, Zhang Qinghua isn't sure that he's seen a more uncontrolled, wide-eyed, open-mouthed expression of horror on his nephew. This takes the cake. Uncle, Bingha says. Zhang Qinghua cackles and claps his nephew on the shoulder. Aha, your mother has already given me this talk several times, but that's not what's happening right now, he says, all at once reassuring and relieved, and anxious as fuck. Not yet. The young protagonist squints suspiciously, but says, if you say so, uncle. Zhang Qinghua spends the next 7 days ready for anything to happen, so he's kind of ridiculously exhausted when nothing actually does. Mo Beijun, Zhang Qinghua, and Luo Bingha pass the full 7 days of observance, then the consummation of ancestral power without further interruption. Lin Guangjun doesn't return from wherever Mo Beijun sent him. Tian Langjun and Zhu Jilang don't show up just to be annoying and inconvenient and terrifying. The White Sea Palace guards and servants don't let anyone inside. However exhausted Zhang Qinghua ends up at the end of things, and Bingha too, looking a little ragged at the edges, neither of them are as exhausted as Mo Beijun. Mo Beijun's raw power has apparently increased many times over, slipping out of the grasp of his control in the form of sudden temperature drops and bursts of shadowy demonic energy dancing over his skin like fire. His eyes are bright like sunlight on ice, matching the mark burning on his forehead, and his tight grip on the doorway to keep from falling over as he passes through it cracks it. Zhang Qinghua is super grateful for his loyal nephew's help in pulling Mo Beijun from the ascension chamber, once he seems to have wrestled this new power back under his skin, back into the entrance hall and down the icy hallways to the set of rooms with an actual bed. How miraculous an actual bed seems now. The White Sea Palace guards and servants, what few of them weren't told to get out, which includes the likes of Hong Hao, Mo Bei Zhao, and Shuang Yun, respectfully keep their distance from the new Northern Demon King. Bingha dumps Mo Beijun on the massive bed, then collapses on his knees beside it, slumping to his side so that he can lie on the floor. Zhang Qinghua smacks his nephew with his sheathed sword. Sure, this room might have actual carpets, but the floor is still made of ice. Luo Jiahui will be disappointed, not angry, just disappointed, if she finds out Zhang Qinghua was letting her teenage son lie on the floor like this. Bingha groans and crawls onto the bed itself, then flops like he intends to move never. Uncle, that was gross, he mutters. Zhang Qinghua smacks him with his sheathed sword again,
even though the young protagonist is totally right. Then he hops around to the other side of the bed and sits down on the edge. He could make his nephew move, but this bed was apparently built by giants for giants, and Mo Beijun doesn't really seem to give a shit. Mo Beijun is breathing deeply and carefully. He was doing this in the ascension chambers, and he continues to do it now, just lying there with his eyes closed and breathing. Bingha falls asleep before too long. Eventually, Mo Beijun's breathing becomes less labored, and he blindly reaches out across the bed for Shang Qinghua's hand. Shang Qinghua surrenders his hand at once. Mo Beijun's touch is noticeably cold right now, even more than usual. But Shang Qinghua puts up with it and reaches out to brush some of Mo Beijun's hair out of his face. Mo Beijun's eyes, when they open to look up at him again, are still too bright, but they're more focused now. They really did it. They made it. My king, Shang Qinghua says proudly.
Yours,
Mo Beijun agrees hoarsely, because the man is a fucking sap, determined to destroy Shang Qinghua's poor, shriveled heart. Mo Beijun squeezes his hand, barely more than a twitch of his fingers, especially careful to be gentle right now, and Shang Qinghua leans down to kiss the back of his hand. It's a little too cold to, but really, Shang Qinghua has put up with worse. He's too happy right now to feel it. They made it. The end.
Oh, Captain, let's make a deal where we both say the things that we both really feel. I feel scared and I'm starting to sink, and I only sink deeper the deeper I think. Oh, Captain, make up your mind, for the soul burns your eyes and you run out of time. As you're popping cork, with all the things that made you feel safe.
The music used for this podfic is Ship in a Bottle by Stefan Argus, remixed by me, Opal Song. And by remixed, I mean I sped it up to like a Europop BPM. I just basically sped it up a lot, which also raised the pitch. Reader's note about the music. So when I was choosing music for this fic, I really wanted something like Euro-poppy, really kind of Euro-trash pop, like just very trashy, because that's how Shang Qinghua hits me as a character, just like a trashy, trashy person. But I was also looking for something that was thematically appropriate. And I was just not finding anything. And so I just asked on Twitter if anybody had ideas for Shang Qinghua songs. And somebody came up with this one, with Ship in a Bottle. And it was perfect. Like, absolutely perfect. But it also is a really good song. Like just really good as music. And I was like, it needs to be worse. It needs to be trash. Like, fun trash, but trash for Shang Qinghua. And then, yeah. And then I sped it up. I was trying to, like, somehow merge it with... It might have been with Barbie Girl. by Aqua. Anyway, I'm not a remixer. I'm not good at music editing at all. But I sped it up and like to match the BPM of Barbie Girl, and suddenly it was perfect. So yeah, that's the story of that. If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening. And some reader's notes. We all made it. We made it. Just like Shang Cheng Hua. This was amazing. Whenever I choose these stories to do as WIP projects, I know I really like them. And then I forget about halfway through how much I like them. This one, I mean, it was a riot the whole way through. The occasional really, really short chapters were just spectacular. As they kind of gave me a week of a break. In the middle of everything, because I would just record them while I was recording the previous chapter because they were so short. I really loved the chance to do something like long and intense with the effects. Credit for the effects goes to at one point, I downloaded, probably from YouTube, and every iPhone effect, like ringtones and text tones and alerts and all of that sort of stuff. And I just use it for, like, everything now. So if you think you recognized one of the effects, it's probably one of the stock ones that came with your phone. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this. I know that there's more in the series. In fact, the author is actively at time of recording this, which is December 2022, is actively writing more in, like, I don't know if they're sequels or spinoffs. I haven't read them. Which segues into the, I don't really have plans on podficking anymore in this series. Again, I haven't even read this stuff. I probably will go read it now. But yeah. As for future work in progress plans, work in progresses are interesting for me as a podficker, because the way I do a lot of hobby stuff is I have like a breadth of different hobbies that I do. I podfic, I write a little bit, I play a lot of video games, I do yarn work like crocheting, I read. Anyway, I have a lot of different hobbies that I do. And normally what happens is that I concentrate, like I get really into something for like a month or two. And then I go hard at it. Like it's all I do outside of work. And then I just sort of like wander away from it for a while. And like podficking is one of my staple hobbies. It's one of the ones that I go back to all the time that I never really leave completely. But I do normally, like there are times when I'm really intensely into it. And then there are times when I don't record for like 2 months because I'm concentrating on playing a video game or I'm concentrating on doing a different project or any number of things. And normally I have like a backlog of projects that I've recorded during sort of the times that I'm focused on it that I can edit, but I don't record. Like that's the big thing. Like recording requires a certain type of creative energy that editing and cover arting and stuff, like, they require different types of creative energy. And I found that basically consistently having to have the recording energy, like, basically being required to record every week. I don't generally record the chapter I am posting that week on the week of. I'm generally a chapter or two ahead, two or three ahead. But I do record basically every week or every 2 weeks. And I found that kind of draining for the back half of Embers, and then for all of this one. It's just hard for me to keep up with that, with how I normally do things. So I think what I'm going to try is I've picked out a fic that I would really, really like to do for my next whip. And I think what I'm going to attempt to do is, the next time I get really hardcore into recording, which hopefully will be over the winter break, because then I won't have school and I won't have work. I will just have, like, free time and ITPE posts at some point in there. So, like, I won't have that to work on. And maybe if I get really into podficking, I will try to record a whole bunch of that one. But I think the goal is to try to have it all recorded, and then I'll just edit and beta week to week, and see how that works. Because I feel like that will be more sustainable for me. It will mean that I will have a big break in between while I get that project ready to go. In any case, looking at the author's notes, I actually do recommend the author's notes of this one, just like the author's notes of Embers. This author puts a lot of really hilarious asides and bits in the author's notes that I didn't record. And in the last one, in the author's notes on the last chapter, the author notes that they wrote this in about a year and 10 to 12 days. And I will be posting this on December, let's see, on probably December 17th-ish, which will be 2 weeks shy of a year from when I started it, which makes total sense because I post one chapter a week. There's 50 chapters and there's 52 weeks in a year. Yeah. I hope you had fun with it. I really love this fic. And shout out to Tossawary, the author, for the amazing cover art. They made a cover for the fic, and I asked whether I could use it. And they actually just full-on made like three variations of the cover, which was amazing. So, yeah, shout out to them for making the awesome cover. Thanks for listening. For the blooper reel, because I'm feeling talkative today, I'm currently recording chapter 27, and it starts with Shang Tinghua lying on top of Mo Beijun in bed and sort of boggling at it. And it is currently June here where I live, and it has just started to get warm. In fact, we kind of skipped spring. We went straight from dead of winter to blazing hot summer. And I'm currently slowly roasting in my podfic cave, which gets kind of warm in the summer. And so just the thought of being able to
Sleep lying on top of the eternally cool Mo Beijun is just... Shang Qinghua, you did some things right, bro.
Fuck them! Who cares what they think? What have they ever done for their opinion to mean anything? You have dignity to spare, my king. Nothing to prove. You're super cool, no matter what anyone says. Be happy. Now, Mo Beijun...
Shang Qinghua, you are just a trash fire of a drunk.